you're really dedicated and you want to have some massive transformation, then it requires that you commit to yourself for at least a few months, you know, to really understand yourself.
You're listening to the Octave Leap Podcast, a coherent vision for the future of business. Welcome back to the Octave Leap Podcast. And we're filming here in this beautiful studio. And I've got an incredible guest with me today. And this woman, she has traveled the world. She has done many, many things in her time, including channeling, being a space holder, subconscious reprogramming. And we're here to talk about getting rid of those pesky inner resistances as a change maker, a healer, or somebody with a big purpose and life work today. So I'd love to welcome Vanessa Storm to the show. How are you doing, Vanessa?
I'm really good. Thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're just having a few laughs before. Actually, the camera was rolling, but it won't be in the episode. So we're warmed up. And that's the important part, right? Is that we just get warmed up, have some fun, and change the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're not having fun changing the world, you need to get your money back. Whoever sold you that course, yeah.
Refund,
yeah. So I think I want to start and ask you a little bit about your background. How did you get into what you do now? And what you do is a number of things, right? So you do like subconscious reprogramming, but you also do quite a bit of intuitive guidance for people as well.
Yeah, well, it's been a long journey. And I think for a lot of people who go into the realm of spirituality, of healing, of really going within, oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes the kickstart is some sort of suffering, some sort of pain, some sort of like, you know, nudge, like something's not right, you know? So it started in 2018. That's when I did a big pivot in my life. I was working in the corporate world and everything was great, you know, on the surface, but deep, deep down, I was like, I don't feel right. something's wrong and I don't know what it is. I need to go and discover. And I had so many questions about life and who we are and consciousness. And I needed to go on my own journey of discovery first and my own healing journey. And I don't think that really ever ends. But it kind of shifts from a healing journey into more of a fun journey. So I started a journey of discovery, of going into lots of different, you know, holistic medicines, of energy healing, of subconscious reprogramming, of channeling, and just discovering. I got really curious about what are the most effective healing tools for myself and for others. And the more I gathered these tools over time, I just naturally wanted to share them with people and be of service to other people. So that's how I picked up my little skills over time.
Right. It's like, okay, I want to skip the ones that are from the 70s that don't really work anymore. I want to go right for the good ones here.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's good. I think it's interesting because we each awaken to sort of like a different place in a way. Because like there's another part of us that's like been through many lifetimes.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like that memory bank can sometimes be like vast, right? So even though you may wake up one day, it's like all of a sudden you become in touch with this thing that's known stuff for a long, long time,
right?
So it kind of gets you back in alignment with those elements that maybe you'd just forgotten about. And it didn't matter if you're in a corporate job or doing whatever in the world. It's like all of a sudden you have this memory. It's like, I am no longer this human that's 25 years old. I am 35,000 years old and I'm from that galaxy over there.
Exactly. Yeah, I like that you say remembering, because it is also a process of remembrance. Remembering who we really are, remembering all of our, you know, genetic lifetimes, remembering what really matters to us.
Oh, yeah. When they tell you you got to get somewhere, attain something, that's just all marketing.
Yeah.
You just got to lean back and remember. You can't sell that, folks.
No, right.
Yeah. What you can do is you can definitely exchange value for a great facilitator, you know, somebody that can hold that space. And I feel like you do that very well. Like that's really what you do is you show up for people. Mm-hmm. You show up and facilitate that space and help them maybe see past their blind spots.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is really about holding that space and creating the right environment, because it's not really, you know, it's not really me doing anything to you or you doing something to me. All the shifts happen within the individual, but it's about what's required. What does it take for that person to have that shift or for that you know, a trauma to heal or for the ability to get the courage to come up, you know? So that's why there's all of these different permission slips that I like to call them. You know, some people need to go to a massive Joe Dispenza event, which is amazing, in order to, you know, experience disease just instantly disappearing from their body. So it's about having the right environment, feeling safe. That's super, super, super number one. And yeah, whatever it takes, that's kind of what I like to say, whatever it takes in order to create a shift.
Yeah. It's interesting because I felt safe the minute I jumped on the phone with you.
Oh.
And that was like one of the reasons why I wanted to follow up. And actually I got a few sessions with Vanessa too. That's one of the reasons why I'm familiar with her work, but I felt safe the minute I was on the phone with her. And that means a lot because that's sort of that trust in a way begins to open up the healing process. It's interesting. And I've noticed this is that there's something called the suppression field. If you have a skeptic walk into the room and like, literally I saw this because my mentor used to have what's called ghost radios, where he used to basically get spirits to come in on quartz crystal radio. So you would hear them talking from these different dimensions. And then if a skeptic walked in the room, it would go from like, yeah, you are, to just like, I'm not kidding. So he's like, he noticed it every time somebody that didn't believe it could happen. They're like, right. Yeah, of course it's just a dumb radio.
Right, exactly.
And it is for them because they're literally like broadcasting that reality out.
Yep.
And so if people walk up to you and they're like, what do you mean you can like fix my problems? It's just like, well, I guess I can't now.
I know exactly. Exactly. I want to talk about two things there because you mentioned safety, which is so important because a lot of times it's, you know, I think the word trauma has become very overly used. Like, what is that really? But it's like imprints, you know, that we have from childhood, from past lives, from all of our experiences. And we keep collecting more imprints over time. And they inform our beliefs and our beliefs create our reality. Just like you mentioned with the dude, you know, and it's like that for everyone. So then it's like, what does it take in order for you to shift your beliefs about yourself, about the world, about concepts, about anything really? So in order to shift a belief and in order to heal an imprint, it could be an imprint that's subtle or innocent in nature. Like we have lots of positive imprints, or it could be an imprint that's really, you know, painful. And you can't just like have a little chit chat with a stranger and be like, oh yeah, I just, you know, healed my childhood trauma there. You know, you really have to create that environment where you can feel safe to go into that place again and change it so that you have a different, well, actually just kind of totally remove it. That's kind of what I like to do, and then replace it with something else. So it's not like the memory goes away, but the imprint changes.
Yeah.
So it goes from something that feels like a memory that feels debilitating and is holding you back into something that has actually served you and is empowering you today.
Yeah.
What was the second thing you said? Safety or something funny?
A suppression field.
Oh yeah, the suppression skeptics, field.
The skeptic. SSS or the SSF, the skeptic suppression field.
Yes. I know. And that's so interesting because then it's like, well, you're kind of living in your own self-fulfilling prophecy there.
Yeah.
Because if you don't believe that that works, then you kind of just miss out.
Yeah.
It's like, it's fun when you start to really get on the bandwagon of like, oh, okay, if I change my beliefs, and it's not just like you can just, you know, wave a magic wand and that will happen. You know, it takes a little bit of adjustment and some tools and techniques, but then reality becomes more malleable. It's not so fixed in place. And it's like, wow, you can open up to infinite possibilities. And we live in this quantum world with a gazillion different timelines. And, you know, you don't have to be so programmed from your past. You can have a totally different future, you know? Yeah. So they always say, you know, oh, the past behavior dictates future behavior. The past dictates the future. And it's like, no, not at all.
Well, it's true, but you can rewrite the past.
Yes.
Right? If you're allowing the past to have control over your life and you're not conscious of the past patterning, it will dictate the future. And there's some people who just live on a, like a predictable loop, right? Yeah. If you don't question it, it's sort of like, you know what the outcome is for these people.
Right.
You know where they're heading. They kind of know where they're heading too, because they convince themselves of it. Oh, I'm going to get cancer in 20 years. Right. I'm going to keep doing this thing though.
Yeah.
But then like you see other people, it's like, well, this person lived 100 and they drank and they smoked and they ate fried food. What the heck? What gives?
Yep.
It's because they have a completely different internal wiring.
Right.
And I mean, the other thing too, that we don't talk about so much conventionally, but I think people who are more conscious acknowledge deeply, is the role of emotions. Right? And I feel like that thing that builds over the imprint is like emotional momentum in a way. So let's say an imprint happens when you're 4 or 5 and it was a rather traumatic one. Mm-hmm. And then it caused sort of like a schism from your natural alignment with life. So you kind of go off in another direction. You're going to accrue sort of this baggage for 20 years or however long it takes for you to undo that.
Right.
And that's the part that sort of is the muscle memory, the neural pathways, the that sort of feeling. But when you remove the imprint, you stop feeding it.
Right.
So it's still, I guess, it is on the person to do their work and to actually clear that momentum and that debris, that residue of emotion.
Yes, yes. And in the beginning, it can feel really painful.
Yeah.
Because you can start to be like, it's so much stuff, you know, in the past. Do I really have to go digging into all of this, you know, past memories and like all of this stuff in the past that you might not want to look at. Mm-hmm. And also the ego personality structure doesn't really like to, it doesn't enjoy in the beginning to self-evaluate in that way, because it's like, no, I just want to continue forward. I just want to have everything fine. I don't really want to look at myself in that way.
The ego loves the past. It loves its familiar. It's what literally keeps it alive. It's like, this is familiar. I know it won't kill me. Cool. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah.
This thing's unknown. It might kill me. Let's not do that. That's how it thinks. It's that simple.
Well, it's like whenever a belief is challenged, a lot of times people meet a little bit of resistance.
Of course. It's unknown.
Yeah.
What's on the other side of that?
Right.
I don't want to step off the cliff into greatness. What are you talking about?
And that's so funny, because a lot of times when I work with people, I'm sure you're experiencing the same. There's, you know, we always have fear of failure. We have fear of like messing things up. Mm. And a lot of times fear of death is usually the biggest underlying one. But a lot of times there's also fear of greatness.
Yeah.
You know, what would happen if it was really easy for you to build your business? What would happen if it was really easy for you to, you know, get all the things that you want to get? Then it's like, sometimes there's a bit of, instead of excitement, there's actually anxiety around that.
Totally. Let's actually take a practical one. So when I worked with Vanessa, one of the things that came up is, what would happen if you didn't have to work 150% to like get results, like over?
Right.
And I'm like, I probably have more time for self-care and more time for life and more time for enjoyment. And it's like, yeah, but how does that serve you? How did it serve you to keep that belief in place? And it reframes the thing, because it's no longer then judging it. Oh, this is bad. It's like, No, in some ways there were positive traits.
Yes.
To keep that thing going. But now you've acknowledged that you want to change it.
Yeah.
Right. It's just sort of like, like, you know, you leave the house with one shirt on.
One shirt?
Yeah. You got one shirt on, and then like you get out and like, oh, I don't like this color. It's like the weather changed. I got to change my shirt. Yeah. Or you go out and it's a sunny day.
Yeah.
Right. Here's a better example. So you make a decision. I'm going to wear this clothing for a sunny day. The clouds come over. It starts raining. You got to put on a jacket. Right. So like there is this natural impermanence to life. Right. And so at a certain point in time, in a certain environment, a belief may serve us.
Exactly.
And then time moves on. And if we don't move with the current of life, and that belief becomes more and more sort of like a rigid, it becomes more and more rigid.
Yeah.
It becomes more and more like enmeshed, but it's not appropriate anymore. It kind of gets in the way.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of like you're growing out of clothes are becoming too tight.
Yeah.
You know, and I really like that you're bringing it up, because that's one of the things that most of us don't see with the limiting beliefs or with how the programming. And it's limiting and it's preventing us from moving forward in the ways that we want to. But it's not until that you have those aha moments where you go, oh, actually it's benefited me, because you will never have a belief that doesn't serve you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, nature and the amazing technology of our mind would never waste space on something, a belief or a brain space that didn't serve you. So that's why I really enjoy going down that path with people and check, well, you know, for example, I have the belief I deserve to be abandoned. I deserve to be hated.
Yeah.
Okay. How's that working for you?
Yeah.
How does it serve you?
Yes.
And the mind, the will immediately go, huh? But it doesn't. You know, no, poor me, victim, da, da, da. It's like, actually, there's a little benefit there. Several benefits. And it carves you into who you need to be. It carves you into the safety. There's some sort of protection. There's some sort of benefit. There's some sort of virtue that you've developed.
Yeah, because let's take that one for example. If you believe that you're meant to be hated, then you have to become self-sufficient.
Exactly.
To a degree. And maybe at a certain point of time, the life lesson was you have to learn self-sufficiency.
Right.
You know, you can't be codependent on other people to get your needs all the time.
Right.
You know, you have to learn how to be giving and receiving. So we're going to teach you this lesson now, but then we're also going to put the programming in there so that you wake up from that lesson.
Yeah.
And that you come into like cohesion where your giving and receiving is equally balanced.
Yes.
And then you don't feel hated, but you know how to take care of yourself.
Exactly.
You can tie your own shoes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And that's when it's like so fulfilling because you get to keep all of the benefits that the belief gave to you, and then you can get rid of the belief and receive the things that the belief has been preventing you from receiving.
Do you hear that, folks? You can have your cake and eat it too. Exactly. Benefits only, nothing on the downside. Sign up here. Sorry, that's the inner beast mode marketer coming out. Anyone who's listened to the podcast has probably heard the beast mode commercial. I showed it to Vanessa the other day and she literally stalked me afterwards and she's like, send me beast mode. Where's beast mode?
I did.
Yeah, I need to see beast mode.
Several times during the day, I was like, did you send it? Did you send it? And then when I got home, I was like, send that to me.
Should we put it in a link below just in case to remind people? Yeah, I think we need to.
Yes.
So beast mode is my ultimate spoof on modern internet marketing. And yeah, it just kind of goes to show, like, I have a lot of fun with it. And I don't want you guys to think this any of this is a sales pitch, but I make fun of marketing in the middle of a very deep and profound conversation.
Yeah.
Because you can't get too serious about this stuff.
No.
You have to have fun.
Yeah.
If you've lost your sense of humor, that's the one thing I think, you know, just don't lie. Don't lose your sense of humor.
Get rid of the 10 commandments. Let's just have those two.
Don't lie. Don't lose your sense of humor. You're good. Eat what you want.
But with the thing, I'm glad that you brought up, you know, oh, there's only the positives to everything, because what I also see and all I have, you know, I have catch myself doing too is chasing this sort of, you know, illusion of a future that doesn't exist where everything is handy dandy and there's zero problems at all. Because we came here for the challenge. We came here for the challenges.
Yeah.
So it's about reframing your perspective around the challenges. And what happens is when you do subconscious reprogramming or when you do healing and you upgrade your journey, you upgrade your challenges.
Yeah. It's actually physically impossible for us to live in a utopia. So I got to give you two stories. One is the sun emits radiation that causes stress. And that stress causes us biologically to evolve. Mm. So there's a sort of a constant stress coming from the radiation and the electromagnetic waves coming off the sun. So it's constantly moving evolution forward.
Yeah.
The second thing is this is really cool, but there's a book, there's a guy, have you heard of the Philadelphia experiment?
Yes.
Yeah. So this guy who he wrote a lot about it because he was basically, he was part of it and he traveled through time. And he writes, he went to the year 2700. He said, humanity is basically controlled by these, not controlled, but governed by these like supercomputer crystals. They're like AI, but like organic AI.
Yeah.
And everything's like idyllic. But he says they have a huge crisis because everything's utopian, nobody then like has to push.
Right.
Nobody's back's against the wall. Nobody has to like make that like, shit, I'm down to my last 10 bucks.
Right.
I'm going to make some money happen here. There's none of that.
Right.
Right. And so as a result, everything just kind of goes down to this like mediocrity.
Yeah.
And then again, like the solar radiation is kicking in. It's like, oh yeah, we've got a national, global crisis here, but we don't know how to like, you know, do anything. It's like communism. It's like, oh my God, really? We've got to do something now. I thought we were just on break for 4 hours.
Yeah. And there won't be movement forward.
No.
And that's, I think on a soul level is what we all deeply desire. Like we all deeply desire a lot of different things, but we always want more expansion, more growth, more progress moving forward. Evolution, basically.
Yeah. We need something that's, you know, there's two forces. There's a receptive force and the initiating force, right?
Yeah.
And if you just say, no, I want to be receptive and just be and chill.
Yeah.
It's like, you just get Burning Man 365 days a year.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fine. But like, who's like actually replenishing the supplies?
Right.
Right. It's like, okay, you've worn all the costumes. How do you get more costumes? Well, we got to go like find a textile factory, and then somebody's got to like sew it into. So I guess we do need all that stuff out there.
Right.
Right. Or, you know, we need more loudspeakers. Okay. Somebody's got to go like mine the metals for the loudspeakers. Or,
right.
Yeah. We need electricity. It's like these things, it's like you can do this in an isolated container for a week or so. Mm-hmm. But like to live in this idyllic paradise, it's like we don't necessarily notice the ripple effect of other things that support it.
No. And you'd get bored.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times when you get all the things that you want, woo, it's like you have a moment of like, yeah, that's great. And then what?
Yeah.
You know?
It's like people are like, I wish the world was like Burning Man. And then like the world was like Burning Man. Like, shit, I just want to sit in an office and do some accounting.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Let's do that for a week. Yeah. Let's all get dressed up in suits. Wake up at 7. Go to the office from 9. That sounds amazing. Yeah. The grass is always greener on the other side.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's funny because, yeah, it's like there's just this natural tendency. You see this with like kids and parents. It's like if your parent does something, it's like you do the opposite.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's why like usually kids like get along with their grandparents because the parents do the opposite of the grandparents. And then you do the opposite to your parents. And you have to be like, yeah, grandpa's cool. He was a rebel too.
Same vibe.
Yeah, same vibe. He did music festivals in the 50s as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also another part is that when you're always going to be nudged by your soul, by your higher self, especially I like to like, there's a lot of missioned souls on the planet, you know, they're like, they feel it in their heart. They're like, I came here for a reason. I came here to make a difference. I came here to have an impact in a positive way, from a place of just like compassion for the planet and humanity. So especially for those individuals, if they just sit around and don't do anything, they're going to feel that calling. You know, they're going to be like, no, but okay, there's some purpose. Mm. You know, so if they sat in Burning Man for months, you know, they would just be like, what am I doing? Wasn't it something that I came here to do?
I live in Ubud right now. And there's a lot of people who are just floating.
Yeah.
Some of them float for decades.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's no time limit on that. But I think at some point they're like, yeah, like, I think I do need to do something.
Yeah.
You know, I think I actually have like a higher calling in the world.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily everyone. And what that higher calling is very different from each individual. So this is not to say like everyone has to be mission souls and everyone has to be on this grand mission to save the world.
No, because then we wouldn't have any like people picking up the garbage. I'm not kidding. You wouldn't have anyone making the new cell phones anymore because they're like, no, I'm going to be a life coach. Like everybody's a life coach. It's like,
everyone.
Who's growing the food?
Yeah. Oh, shit. So there's, you know, there's different journeys that each soul wants to go on.
Totally.
You know, someone might want to be like, oh, I'm going to go down there and be a home mom, or I'm going to go down there and be a bowling instructor. You know, there's no right or wrong. Everything's great, really. It just depends on what you want to experience.
Totally.
And then tapping into like, okay, what do I really want to experience? And then when you tap into what you really want to experience, all the programming comes up. Oh no, what if this, what if that? I won't be able to make it happen. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
So that's all the sticks in the wheel.
It's interesting because like this is the first thing when I quit my corporate job, I'm like, what is my purpose? But then also, what is the purpose of everybody else? Mm. And that's what led me to start building what I've created just recently is the trifecta of human design, gene keys, and evolutionary astrology. Because that answers that question. Mm. It's like, what layer of purpose do you want to examine? Because we've got three here. We've got like how your energy works and how you like output on a basis. It's like human design, very masculine, very yang.
Yeah.
Gene keys is like receptive and contemplated and very feminine. You just meditate upon your purpose and then it comes on a lotus flower. Perfectly served you. And evolutionary astrology is like this thing, like the tentacles of the roots of the subconscious that just go deeper. Mm. When you put the three lenses together though, like I've been doing a lot of these sessions lately and everybody has a huge aha shift moment in the session about like, I only try to answer one thing too, because they can go in many directions.
Right.
So I try to just keep it super like honed in, like, who are you? What's the thing in front of you? But it's interesting to see. It's like some people are almost 100% in alignment. There's just like one little area and they get that back and it's like everything comes into place. And then some people are like 90 degrees
way
out.
Off.
But they're kind of sitting there nodding and they're like, yeah, I've got to, like, this is the mountain of work that I have to do.
Yeah. You get clarity.
And that clarity isn't just information. That clarity is energetic.
Yeah.
You know, and it begins the process to which people start to ask the questions where they probably run into the beliefs that kept them from getting to their purpose, in which they then need to rewire.
Right.
So in a way, I don't want to say there's like a faster, more efficient, but there is. There's tools that can keep you out of the cave for, you know, years and decades and just like basically keep you in the flow of modern life.
Yeah.
But get your clarity in the right direction.
Right.
About what you're here to do and what's really going to be fulfilling.
Right.
Right. Because whatever we're calling normal is just what we've been doing a long time.
Yeah.
But that's not like the actual normal for us. Like the actual normal is more of that other layer we were talking about earlier that's like deeply fulfilling. That's normal. It's just we're not starting from a baseline that's anywhere close to zero. It's like minus like 100 in the world that we live in, right? Like, I mean, if you look at the advice we're given, look at what we grow up with, it's pretty like compressed into a very narrow range of things.
Of what's normal.
Yeah, what's considered normal and acceptable. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And like the emotions are just like in the way kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's all mental and it's all kind of like boxy.
And robot-like. And like you have to adhere to all of these norms. And that's what made me shoot off. Like I grew up in Norway.
Yeah.
And Norway is an amazing place.
In some ways, they got it right. I mean, everyone's taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Low crime.
It's amazing. But it was so like recipe life, you know, and again, this, I'm not judging it. There's nothing wrong with that. But it wasn't what my soul wanted.
Yeah.
So I liked shooting off and exploring and having all these different ways of living and being. And it's about like what feels right to you and what kind of life is it that you want to live?
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's important to allow yourself to, you know, go outside of the norm.
Yeah.
And feel accepted in that.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, I've been to Scandinavia and all the Scandinavian countries kind of have a similar social setup. It's like you're supported, you can get all the money, all the like base needs you need. But then like beyond that, it's like, just don't get out of the box. Just stay in the box. The box is here for a reason.
Yes. It
keeps everyone safe.
Yes.
Don't question the outside of the box.
No.
All right. Screw off. I'm off to Bali.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's very much like that. But I don't know. I have a funny feeling with it because they've kind of, it works. You know, the system works. Everyone goes to work, people make money, basic needs are met, and it's functional. But there's energetically a limitation. I just feel like I can't, you can't expand in the box.
Well, you kind of see it in other ways too, because like Scandinavia was one of the few places where on any night of the week, people would be drinking till 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Especially on the weekend. Like it kind of comes out in other ways. It's like
that's true.
The beast isn't getting fed. The animal nature isn't getting fed. The emotions aren't getting fulfilled. So then people go out and have these wild ragers.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And it kind of comes out in more, you know, unconscious or darker ways or ways that don't serve the individual.
Yeah. Yeah. And also the level of perfectionism in the Scandinavian country is so high. You know, have a perfect life, be a happy family, have a great job, be happy all the time. When deep down, there's so many suppressed emotions that leads to drinking, like you mentioned, or taking other drugs and needing some sort of other outlet because the pressure to perform or the pressure to be so perfect is so high.
Yeah. So imagine like, it's kind of interesting because like society in a way, it kind of develops at a slower pace than sort of the visionaries and the change makers. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like we're the people we're talking to are probably people who are just sitting here nodding at like my society's way behind where I'm from. But like they're getting that base layer. Right.
Yeah.
So maybe in 20 years or 30 years, they'll get that next layer. And they're like, you know what? Actually, like we got to open up about emotions. We got to talk. We got to figure out like healthy masculine and feminine dynamics. Right. We got to talk about trauma and healing and all of these things in a very open-minded way.
Yeah.
And then things will start to shift.
Yeah.
And I think they kind of are, because I think the world was so traumatized by lockdowns, right? It's like, we can't just sweep that under the rug. It's like, you know, everybody's kind of carrying this burden with them. Some people are thriving because they have the tools to alleviate that trauma and to disperse it. But a lot of people who didn't have this and were in the box are pretty jangled because they're realizing that the box isn't a container that can hold them anymore.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of people also realizing that the systems that created the box and everything behind it, you know, the intentions behind that, what's that all about? You know, not going too much into that side, but, you know, people, I think it's healthy that people are starting to question things, everything really.
I think, yes, when we are in a period of transition, everything should be up for questioning.
Right.
Right. And some, you know what? Some things will remain.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, oh, actually the state where we take care of everyone. Yeah, that remains.
Right.
You know, but the part about like shutting up and perfectionism, that part we can change.
We can let that go.
But I think a lot of the people we're speaking to, they've kind of transcended that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are some people who exist in these countries, but they've probably found their tribe on the internet. Or they probably found their tribe in, like, you know, the local New Age gift store. You know, like, well, I'm not kidding. Yeah. Every little like farmer town in Canada, like they'd have a New Age crystal store and like all the weirdos are gathered there and they do their channeling sessions and their Reiki and, you know, you have your community.
Yeah.
You have your tribe.
Right.
And then you go back to the families and the old friends and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, next Wednesday, can't wait for next Wednesday's healing circle.
Exactly.
Where we all meet again.
Yes.
But, you know, now's the time to step up too. And I think one thing, like we were talking about before, is that change makers struggle stepping into the greatness, you know, and it's like, you know, responsibility is easy compared to greatness. Stepping into a little bit more responsibility in life, but stepping into your greatness, it's like, ooh, this is like something I get to define myself without limitations.
Yeah.
But there's no one to give me a course on this.
Yeah.
How do I do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you have to ask yourself, like, what is greatness to you? What is,
totally.
What is living out your fullest expression of who you really are? What does that look like?
Can you handle getting all your needs met? Where's the problem?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what kind of inner resistance do you generally see with these type of people? People who are here for a big purpose in life.
Yeah.
But, you know, struggle on their own, struggle with their inner game.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few, there's obviously it's very different from each person. Everyone has their own individual programming, but there are some general themes that I tend to see. And one big one is actually the problem of receiving. That is really hard for people to receive. So for a lot of people, they want more abundance in their lives and want to receive more effortlessly, but they're blocked. You know, so there's this in judgment of like, oh, I can't receive. I need to do more. I have to perform more. I have to give more than I can receive.
Ooh. Is there one common root cause or is there multiple root causes with that?
There can be multiple, but usually there's this personal programming and usually both personal programming and collective programming.
Yeah.
So the whole monetary systems, how that programs us is that you have to be a slave in order to earn, you know, a bit of pocket money.
Yeah.
You know,
so even if you're mentally aware of that, there's still programming running through your nervous system.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. 100%. So you can have an awareness of that and it still runs. It's like, you can be aware of the virus in the program, the virus on the computer, but if you don't take it out, it's still going to be there.
Yeah.
So it's still going to run.
Yeah.
So there's a collective, the monetary system does a huge amount of programming to us. And then how we grow up, how do your parents, you know, talk about money when you grew up? They'll say, did they label things as, oh, that's expensive, or that's, we can't afford that, and things like that. And even though there's truth to that, and they probably had to say it, it conditions the mind to be able to label things that that's a lot and that's a little. While in reality, everything's relative.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about changing your perspective around, you know, the value of anything.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because like, people will gladly pay $500,000 for a house.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't pay $5,000 for maybe working with somebody that could absolutely change their life.
Right.
You know, they look at that and they go, oh, that's expensive. But you put a down deposit on that house, which was $30,000, and you're saying this is expensive. The house doesn't give you anything other than shelter above your head and feels good. But like, you know, or, you know, you see this too. It's like, oh, that gym membership's expensive, but like I can go out and spend all this money on drinks, no problem.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about your perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the big thing too is that with what you do, it's like you're describing something that again is unknown for people. Mm. Right? And so it's like for them, they're like, I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah.
And so they have to really want it.
Oh yeah.
You know, they have to kind of be at a point where like, I keep getting in my own way.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just kind of sitting on the fence right now. And I just need somebody to help me like get over to the other side.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's usually a sign of that. The belief is done. Like the pattern, the loops, the challenges, it's like, it's served its purpose. Mm-hmm. And now it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Time for some new shoes.
Uh-huh.
Belief shoes.
What, so you mentioned that there's obviously the monetary system in family patterning that goes behind people's inability to receive. What else do you, what else comes up? Like what other type of patterning gets in there? Cause like, I do know what you mean. Like there is a tendency for a lot of, change makers and healers to martyr themselves.
Yes.
You know, they give away too much of themselves and then they pat themselves on the back.
Yeah.
And they're depleting themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what else? I mean, there's plenty of things. And sometimes it's really interesting to go down into the subconscious and to figure out what the connection points, because sometimes they can also seem totally, you get surprised, but what kind of belief is beneath it.
Mm.
So this is kind of different, but just a random example. I had a client who couldn't stop vaping. Mm-hmm. And you know, on a surface level, you could think that could be beliefs of like, well, nicotine is addicting, or I'm addicted to nicotine, or I need to vape in order to relieve myself from stress. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems obvious. But then when we dig deeper in it, it came from a childhood experience where he felt trapped. And it had to do with his relationship with his free will. So if someone took his vape away, or if the, you know, his freedom to do as he pleases, including vaping, if that was taken away from him, every time he tried to quit, he felt like his free will was taken away.
Wow.
So it's from a childhood memory. He was stuck on a farm with his family and he couldn't go anywhere.
Mm.
So he got this like sensation of, I want to do what I want to do, regardless of what it is.
Wow.
So it seemed totally like you couldn't even make that connection that, oh yeah, I vape because when I was a child, I lost my sense of free will and I want to keep that feeling by vaping.
Wow.
So it's super fascinating. Like the mind is complex and interesting, and you know, that's why it takes a little bit of process, and that's why we all need to support each other as well. Because it's not like you can, like some people are able to do it, and if you have a long history of different learning different healing tools, yes, but we need each other, because you can't just sit down and be like, all right, let me figure out this patterning here. Oh, I just realized that all by myself. We need a little bit of support and encouragement to figure out the connection points.
Totally.
So there's, I mean, with the subconscious, it's plenty. So it's like, pick a topic and I can share, you know.
How long does it generally take people to rewire these beliefs?
So we have, with the subconscious, there's endless beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So what we don't want to do is create this idea of that, oh, I have now rewired my entire subconscious, because it's vast.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a matter of picking, seeing where you have the biggest limitations in life and start with those.
Yeah.
There are some teachers who say that once you've done enough work on the subconscious, you can merge the subconscious with the conscious and you get a super conscious. But I don't want to put that as a goal for people, because what does that, how do you know that you've worked on your entire subconscious?
Because you're glowing.
Right.
You just radiate.
You're just like,
I am brain.
So then, you know, because we don't want to live, we don't want to place ourselves too much in the future.
Yeah.
You know, it's be here now, be okay with what is now, accept yourself for how everything is, you know, now.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the first stepping stone? What is the first thing that you want to work on?
Yeah.
So I kind of want to totally eradicate this goal of like, I must reach this point of completion with my subconscious. But when it comes to, you know, you can have a session and you can take some beliefs, and then obviously you can have a massive shift from one session, but it depends on how deep do you want to go and how much change do you want to create in your life. Mm-hmm. So if you're really dedicated and you want to have some massive transformation, then it requires that you commit to yourself for at least a few months, mm-hmm. you know, to really understand yourself. Because once you start with the subconscious, it's like you scratch the surface a little bit and then you're like, oh, wow, okay, there's so much here to explore.
Yeah. But you work pretty fast with people.
I do. I do like speed.
Yeah. Like you in a session, you'll move through
a lot,
several beliefs.
Yeah.
You know, you use muscle testing to sort of like validate that they've been removed.
Yeah.
But then comes the maybe processing time on the person in their own time when they're actually encountering, oh, now I get a different choice. This right. is, this decision isn't being made for me by my subconscious.
Yes. Yeah. That's part of my personality. So I do like speed. I like efficiency. I like, you know, the biggest amount of results with the least amount of input. Uh-huh. So, you know, some people would be like, oh, you can't do healing fast. You know, you have to spend years in therapy or, you know, all this trauma is going to take me a year to heal. I like to challenge that and be like, I don't know.
That's how therapists get their recurring subscriptions, right? Psychologists are good. I've been seeing you for the last 20 years. Yeah. How else could we tidy up your psychology? Put it into a box.
Yeah. All right. So it's not about rushing healing, but it's about, you know, if why sit in misery for longer than what's necessary?
Yeah.
So, and it's also fun, you know, create big shifts fast. It's like, it's exciting. So I'm more of a rocket ship kind of person, obviously with care and tenderness around what needs to heal.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy the process of speeding things up a little bit.
Yeah. It's interesting. We all have our own speeds that we like to work with and we attract the people that work with those speeds.
Yeah.
I like fast too.
Yeah. Let's go. Whoa.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Got work to do.
Yeah.
But not too hard.
No.
Yeah, this is great. I think, you know, you're talking about these things that normally people in spirituality are aware of and they work with, but you're actually articulating them, I think, in a way that people can relate to. Mm. And I think that's important because it kind of makes the unknowable a little bit more knowable.
Yes. And then it feels a little safer to go into it.
Yeah. That's always been my like life purpose is like, how do you articulate the unknowable? Right.
Right.
It's like the conversation we're having the other day, we're like, what is creation? Universe. It's like, you can't know God. Actually, I think we can know God. It's this 20 trillion year long route in the shape of an egg, the cosmic egg, where you're ejected from the white hole and you go through this 20 trillion year circuit and you end up into the black hole at the end.
That's life.
That's life.
There we go.
And we're only about 0.1 trillion, not even that, like 0.01 trillion years. So buckle up, folks. You think this is the great awakening? This is the mini great awakening for which there will be many.
Exactly.
You think we're going to evolve into our highest form? Wait until you're like 20 galaxies that are merging together into a state of absolute transcendence for 7 billion years. And that's an app. Mind's blown. Radar silence. Technical glitches. But anyway, back to my point. Just trying to make the unknowable a little bit more knowable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, so for example, with that, what you just said.
Whatever that was.
Because there's so much relief in that perspective as well. Because then you zoom out from your tiny, tiny, tiny little experience here where we identify so much with everything, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, it didn't message me back. Ah, you know, it's like, okay.
My Tinder date didn't message me back. Yeah. She's ghosting me and I was really attracted to her profile. You are God. You've got another 19.99 trillion years of this. Oh, I guess putting it in the larger scheme, we'll move on then.
Exactly. And that's what's so nice because it's about expanding your perception, expanding your awareness, tapping into the bigger picture, tapping into what's really important to you. Because then we don't get so hung up on those. It's not that they're not important and our emotions around the daily things that happen are not important. But if you want to have real progress forward, then zooming out as far as you can. And that's why I like rocket ship, you know, go as far out there as you can so that you can bring that back down into your daily life.
We talked about this too. And it's interesting because like this has come up actually scientifically. So Dr. John Lilly, who was the psychologist who invented floating and also in the CIA Gateway Project, they both sets of scientists acknowledged that our awareness is generally dispersed, right? Like, so it's kind of distracted in a way.
Right.
It's not focused.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, it kind of just like gently pushes up against sort of the next dimensional layer and then kind of bounces back.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, we kind of stay in this like, da, 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 da. But when you like actually take your awareness and you compress it into a very narrow bandwidth, it becomes like a laser and that laser can penetrate through.
Yes.
Right. So in order for us to have access to the focus necessary to do that, we need to kind of clear out the stuff that's running in the background, that's getting in the way, the detritus,
right?
The debris.
Yeah.
So I feel like that bandwidth is when we clear out the limiting stuff, the stuff that keeps us there, the stuff that takes up energy that we don't notice about, then we have this like ability to super focus.
Right.
And when we super focus, then we can actually place our attention somewhere we want to go, penetrate through the higher dimensions to actually get that thing, create it in unmanifest reality, and then it shows up in manifest reality.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's my 3-step to manifestation guidebook you can download. No, I'm joking. There's no guidebook in the comments below. There's lots of stuff there, including a very special gift that Vanessa's giving away.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, this is a little bit of a...
co-creation.
Co-creation, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is my frequency medicine, my... It's the 528 frequency, so really good for cellular regeneration and DNA. It's also got a brainwave entrainment frequency that brings your brain in harmony with the Schumann resonance, which is the heartbeat of the earth. And over top of that, we have wonderful guidance by Vanessa. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what the nature of this meditation is about?
Yes. So this is a heart activation. So we haven't even talked about the heart consciousness today.
No. The subconscious is so vast.
I know, right? But it all makes sense because also when we're tapping into, we've been talking about limitations and tapping into greatness. And really when you want to tap into your soul mission, your purpose in life, you know, it's also about getting out of your head and getting into your heart. Because it's through your heart that you're connected to your higher self. It's through the heart that you're connected to your soul. You can get divine guidance. You can get access to all of the information that you need in order to move forward. And then that's why it takes courage to follow your heart. So if you tap into your heart consciousness and you're like, oh, I'm getting clarity here now. I know what I need to do. I know where I need to go. I know the people I need to connect with. Then the fears of the mind will come up. So... if you do really want to get clarity and you want to operate from an expanded place, and also this is where I think the whole of all of humanity is going from a very mind dominant place. Not that we're going to get rid of the mind, it's a tool, but we're all going to drop down into the heart and operate more from our heart consciousness. And that's also where we're interconnected as well. And once you start to operate from your heart consciousness, that's also when you can bypass all of the limitations of the mind. If you have the courage to operate from the heart. So again, a little like fast track rocket ship method. So the thing is though, when we talk about the heart consciousness, it can sound a little woo. What is this all about? Well, okay, I'm just going to operate from my heart, you know, as if it's some sort of woo woo thing. It's not. There's a lot of science behind it. Like Joe Dispenza, the Heart Math Institute, they've done a lot of research around brain heart coherence and what happens when you're actually in harmony and the frequencies between the heart and the brain. Obviously, we can ramble on a lot about that. I know that you know a lot about this.
Yeah, too. And you know, this is something that the show really focuses on.
Yeah.
And you know, even what we're talking about, all the rewiring of subconscious beliefs allow us to basically pave that superhighway. Exactly. Because those are the roadblocks, the construction areas on that highway,
yeah.
Right? And when we say, okay, construction's done, then there's that transmissivity of energy between the heart and the head. There's a book called The Biology of Transcendence, and it was written by Joseph Chilton Pierce, and it was his commentary and his beautiful language. He actually wrote the book A Crack in the Cosmic Egg too, so we won't get back on the egg thing, but he's been an old pioneer of consciousness. And one of the things that really stuck out in the book for me was that he said that modern science has discovered neurons in the heart.
Exactly.
And that previously they thought the neocortex was the most evolved part of the brain, mm-hmm. but now they realize that the heart is the most evolved part of the brain.
Yes.
It's part of the brain, folks. It's the fourth tier of the brain. You know, we have the brainstem, we have the limbic system, we have the neocortex, now we've got the heart.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's really exciting because it's a process of discovery. Mm-hmm. You know, because we're not programmed to be like, I'm thinking with my heart right now. Mm-hmm. It's so normal for us to be in the mind, to be in the head all the time. So sometimes people are like, how do I get into the heart? How do I think with my heart? How do I even know that I'm operating from my heart? So to make that journey of discovery easier for you and to make it easier for you to tap into your heart consciousness and to really experience what it's like to operate from your heart consciousness, you can listen to the heart consciousness activation that will be in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It'll be in the description below.
Yes.
And this is worth $100,000, but you're not going to pay that. You're not even going to pay $10,000. You're not even going to pay $1,000. You're going to pay nothing.
Nothing.
It's free, folks.
Yes.
There's the little like ringleader marketer coming out again just for fun. Right. It's a gift. I mean, it was always going to be a gift. We're never going to give you a gimmick, but it's a really, really lovely gift for people.
It's so nice. And it's a deep journey. It takes you into a trance state. It's nothing for you to do. You just relax and just allow yourself to be tinkered with by us, you know, and the frequencies and the guided meditation and your higher self and all of your spirit guides. It's like, again, it's like a practice for you to receive. So can you allow yourself to receive this gift? Can you allow yourself to have your heart consciousness be turned on and start to experience the magic that happens once you start to operate from your heart? Because once you start to get more heart dominant, it really, you start to get so much support in life. You know, all the synchronicities come into place, you know, the law of attraction stuff, but it's from the heart. Once you really start to make decisions from the heart, because we're not programmed to be like, oh, I'm in a challenging situation here. Then what does my heart say? Apart from the spiritual communities.
Yes.
So I'm happy that we're moving towards that. You know, it's common to say now, how's your heart doing? What would your heart tell you?
Yes.
You know, like 20 years ago, they'd be like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? I'm cut off from my neck. Yeah. I just live above here from the neck upwards. I just think about things. I'm rational. I'm a rational being.
Exactly.
Emotions just get in the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this is the fun thing, stepping into the unknown. Because when you do subconscious reprogramming, it's not like, all right, and now you make this master plan based on your new beliefs. The new beliefs will make the master plan for you.
Hmm.
So it's like, it's exciting.
Yes.
So, and then you're like, ooh, what's going to happen now? Oh, I actually believe that making money is easy.
What? I didn't think I was going to get this. It's like the surrender experiment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is a great book. I read it earlier this year.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And like the guy literally like owns like $100 million company. And like, he's like, I just meditated and did yoga. Yes.
He is also a genius though. He's very intelligent. Yeah, he
downplayed that part in the book. Showed up at the retreat center and everything else came. And there's contracts and legal deals and all this kind of stuff. Exactly. Software company, international, like what, like how?
Yeah.
And just kept saying yes, whatever it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So that's where also stepping, you can also feel a little bit to end with that, the fear of the unknown, you know, that we all have to some degree, you know, stepping into the unknown feels a bit uncomfortable, but when you're operating from your heart, there's almost like this safety net because the universe and source and life always supports that which supports the universe and source and life. So whatever supports that which is in the highest good of all that is safe. So if you're operating from the heart, you're connected more to all that is, to source. Your intentions are like, how can I serve myself and all that is in the highest and easiest way? There's like the safety net around that.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to worry so much about, oh, is it going to work out? You know, have I made the right or wrong decision? It's like, no, either way, if you're operating from the heart, you're making the right decisions.
You don't need to build a bomb shelter to survive the apocalypse now. And the apocalypse isn't so bad. It's just merely a chance for us to grow as a species. Serious. It's like, you know, like your best insurance policy during these times isn't like trying to be a survivalist or a prepper. It's literally just like getting into heart consciousness and staying in that configuration no matter what happens. Yeah. That's the tricky part.
Yeah.
Right? Because things externally can be so like crazy sometimes, especially now. Like I notice this a lot in business with money. You know, people like, they'll be like, oh yeah, like I hit it. And then like no money.
Yeah.
I've been there too. It's like these big swings of like, oh, I'm doing amazing. And then like, oh, I'm not doing well at all. I'm doing amazing. And it's like, so that's happening. And like, you know, people are like, but like if you're living on a heart, just trust, you know, or like, I don't know, like obviously during the pandemic, it's like, will I be able to get home and see my family? It's just like, just trust. You'll be where you need to be. It's like, if something else is going to happen that's going to destabilize the world, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Just trust.
Exactly.
It's hard. Just trust.
Exactly.
Because the hard part is feelings for those feelings. But if you, this is the big thing that I noticed is that no matter what's happening externally, like I had this wrist injury, caused a lot of disruption with work, that type of thing. And there's a part of me like, how am I going to earn a living? Because for months, I'm not going to be able to work the way I was working.
Yeah.
It's just like, just trust. Something else is got handled.
Yeah.
And if you waste energy and attention, well, you're going to recreate that. You know, you're going to actually create a very like shitty situation that you then have to like learn from versus trusting in the first place and realizing that the only thing that you're meant to do is deal with the sensations in the body.
Yes. And it's easier to do that from the heart as well. And especially if you're going through a challenging time, because it's not about, you know, bypassing all the emotions or never experiencing, you know, despair or the lower emotions ever again. I mean, resisting them is only going to cause it to persist. Mm-hmm. But when you drop that into the heart, it's also much easier to have compassion for yourself for what you're going through.
Totally.
And then it's easier to move through it. But when you're in the mind, it's in the mind where judgment is. Mm-hmm. And when you judge yourself, you like cut yourself off. You know, you're beating yourself up, and you're making the challenge much harder than what it needs to be for yourself.
Yeah.
So if you want to smooth up the challenge, you know, go down into the heart, and that's where you can have that compassion for yourself.
Yeah. And in many ways, it's too, if like, if you avoid the feeling and you try to like muscle your way through with the mind, it's like there'll be a point where you just don't get any results.
Yeah.
And you're forced to surrender because life's like, you're not doing the thing you need to do.
Yeah.
The thing you need to do is feel these feelings that are coming up for you.
Exactly.
And it's interesting because there's actually a lot of programming in our society around feelings. It goes back to Plato, you know, Plato, the Greek philosopher.
Yeah.
Plato said that like emotions and like, cause everyone listens to him, especially like in our society, it's like Plato said, the emotions are just kind of like in the way. It's all about like rational logic.
I know.
And then everyone's like, okay, Plato said rational logic, emotions bad. Okay. Forget about emotions. Seriously. And then we built this whole thing up and like, you know, in the 1700s, when there was like a lot of scientific discoveries and stuff, they had the Age of Enlightenment, but it was rational enlightenment. It was this very heady, like,
very heady.
Oh, we're going to like fix the world with science type of thing. And we still have that today.
Yeah.
Look what it's become.
Yeah. And I think a merging of those two is where the beauty lies. You know, so not to totally disregard logic and rational thinking, but to also see your emotions as your superpowers.
Totally. I've been getting into like so much scientific material, like heart math stuff,
right?
And more formal studies, because I want to be able to actually articulate this stuff, rather than just like waving my hands and going, "Live from your heart, folks." Yeah, it sounds really like juvenile after a while, right? But if you're like, no, specifically, there's neurons in your heart. It's the fourth like layer of your brain. They're like, really? Yeah, actually, you can go look it up. Here's a PhD like study, and they're like, oh shit, you're right.
Yeah,
I can't like, you know, out logic you here. All right,
exactly. And it's so funny because what's happening there is that you're getting your mind on board to be more in your heart.
And then that's where the game changer comes, right? Because if they're pulling in two different directions,
doesn't work.
It's not going to work.
No.
You know, there's a beautiful, I think it was a Zen monk I was reading about, but he says that like the head and the heart kind of move in two different directions in most people. Right. And like, if they're not connected, it's like the heart will like emotionally eat. The heart will like drink a lot or, you know, have these habits that are sort of like, it's not getting its needs met. So it kind of comes out in unhealthy ways.
Compensation.
Yeah. Right. And then the head's kind of making all these judgments and decisions, but you need to cultivate the observer, and the observer is sort of like the parent that they basically brings the two kids together.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And exactly. that is sort of in the symbolism of every spiritual tradition and major religion.
Yeah.
And that's really what they're talking about. And in fact, they found that the right hemisphere of the brain is wired in with the heart, the holistic thinking. The left hemisphere of the brain is actually wired in with their survival instinct. Mm. So you need that. That's why it's like always like looking for problems.
Yeah.
It's like looking for threats. Actually. It's like, yeah. I'm actually trying to keep you alive here and protect you.
Exactly.
The other thing is that the left hemisphere of the brain filters information from reality.
Yeah.
So that's what its job is, to like filter out anything that's happening. The right hemisphere of the brain actually accepts whatever the left hemisphere tells it.
Oh, interesting.
So it's protecting in a way, because it's like, I know you.
Yeah. You
know, I know you don't believe anything I say. So if I pick out the wrong thing here, you'll just like take it and run with it. Yeah. And like store it somewhere like down here. So I've got to make sure I'm filtering like the best quality of information for you, my brain, because I love you.
Yeah.
But you're way too emotional. You're way too logical, man. I just like believe anything, but you don't give me the good stuff. Yeah, we're talking about the conversation going on in our brain.
Yeah.
The real conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, it's, you know, life is a series of choices. We just make choices, choices, choices on a daily basis.
Unfortunately, most people make the same choices.
Yeah.
You know, they say there's 2 billion bits of data hitting us.
Yeah.
The left brain filters 2,000. So it's literally 99.999% is filtered out.
Yeah.
But the decisions we make or the thoughts we think are 40,000
yeah.
on the average person.
Yeah.
So
I thought it was 70.
Well, obviously you're hanging around like more open-minded people. But literally open-minded means that you like, you're making, your bandwidth for making decisions is larger.
Yeah.
So maybe you can stretch that from 40 to 70.
Yeah.
From 70 to 100, from 100 to 150.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you can have choices. Some people don't have choices. They don't realize they have choices. They don't realize.
I'll challenge that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some people don't realize they have choices and they make the same decision.
Yeah.
Right. And two, they're a bit skeptical of making other decisions. So if they make the other decision, they're kind of reinforcing their failure.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And that's the challenging part, because you can't convince them. It's like, well, I tried something else on the menu and it sucked.
Yeah. I don't want to do that again.
I'm going to just stick with my beef dip.
But also just want to comment on that dissonance that can happen. If your heart is telling you one thing, but your mind is saying something else, and creating that coherence, because that's when they can't agree, when they can't unite, then you're stuck.
Mm.
How can you move forward when you got, you know, the king and the queen saying different things?
Right.
So that's when you can create movement forward. That's when you can make an aligned decisions. That's when you can make choices that are empowering for yourself and put you on the highest timeline, you know, when you have that coherence.
What a beautiful like capstone to this conversation. And if you want to experience the coherence, we've got a beautiful free invitation for you. Just scroll into the comments below, whether you're watching on YouTube, you're listening on the audio version, and there'll be a link there. You go there, you get it for free. Also, if you're interested in knowing more and clarifying your life purpose, I've got trifecta readings, which is human design, gene keys, and astrology. Super powerful. Vanessa's going to get a reading soon, so she can't really comment on it now, but she will soon.
My future self is saying,
epic. Giddy up, this is epic. But if you really want to understand your life purpose, your soul purpose, and also the nature of your core wounding on a DNA level, which funny enough becomes our vocation in life, then this reading is for you, because it powerfully combines three systems. And it's, I'd say, one of the best things I've created this lifetime. So in the description below, basically the description to this video has gold in it, gold and diamonds.
Exactly.
So go there. But in the meantime, thank you for joining us for this amazing podcast. Thank you, Vanessa, for being on the show and just having a nice, light, deep, you know, life-changing conversation.
Right. Super fun.
That's the way they should all be, right?
Yes.
With that Bill Hicks skit. What if the news is positive? I'm not going to go into that. That'll be another tangent. All right, folks. Have a good one. Thank you very much.